11, and we're continuing our interview with Fred Gene Winslow. And the last time that we talked, Fred, in your interview, you mentioned that you'd had your eye straightened up as you had crossed eyes, and you had an unhappy incident in school. Would you explain that for us, please?
Well, I don't remember ever doing anything. I might have been doing something, but I don't remember doing it. But anyhow, I had a teacher by the name of Miss McKinney, and she slammed me, come by and slammed me over the head with the book and rolled my crossed eye back in and locked it in. And a few words went on, not only with my family, but Dr. Ralston made a trip down to the school. He was our eye doctor here then. He made a trip down to school, and I don't think they was ever done anything. Nowadays, there would be something done about it, but that time, well, they got away with them kind of things.
Well, that's an unfortunate incident. Then we talked about the Burger Grocery Gang. Can you tell me a little more about the...
Well, there's just a bunch of us kids that all lived right there in the neighborhood. I lived right across the street from the store, and there's a bunch of kids there in the neighborhood, and they got to calling us the Burger Gang because we all hung out there around the store. I am the only one left. The only other one that I can remember of that is still alive, and he really didn't hang out with us too much, is Bud Hendrickson. He's still alive. He's in town somewhere, someplace, but I haven't seen him for a long time. But oh, there's Ted Heggie, Don Caldwell, Keith Rowe, Bob Clark, myself, and there's a few other kids that come around now and then. Bill Terry and Claire McManus. They was around part of the time. They was all pretty well raised right in that neighborhood.
You said they started out doing little chores for her, and she'd give you candy and stuff like that. And later, when you got older, she hired you to work in the store.
That's right. I probably learned more math there than I ever learned in school. You take one of them grocery slips and write down the prices on it and add it up by hand quicker than she could do it with the adding machine by the time she got done teaching us how to do our math. And she was a wonderful person. She had a few traits that wasn't too well liked by some of the neighbors, but she was nice, and she was good to all the kids.
At that time, how many grocery stores would you say in La Grande? Neighborhood groceries as well as the main groceries?
Well, it was Andrews, Burgers, Divine's, Greenwood. Over here, there was Nick Fowler's had the one up here on the corner where Eddie Huff was at the H&H grocery. On down 2nd Street here from the H&H grocery, which is right across from the Revere School, was Hanlon's grocery. That was the ones on this side of town, down in this area. And even when I was a little younger, there was another one over on the corner of Y and Ash. It was...
Why do you suppose there were so many little family groceries?
Well, I think part of it was neighborhood is easier. You didn't have the transportation, as much transportation then, and all these little neighborhood groceries. And most people was having a tough time, and they could get a little credit in these stores. What have you.
It was Depression times.
That's right.
They paid off the grocery bill and got a few more groceries.
And at that time, there was about 4 Safeway stores in town. There was one in the old Foley Hotel. There was one down under China Mary's Noodle Parlor. There was one on down where Globe Furniture is. And there was another one over across by the old Hub City Lockers.
The one down where Globe Furniture store was the first attempt at the modern supermarket.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you went in and the clerk helped you put your groceries in a basket and then wrote you up at the counter. But they started checking you out at the counter with your groceries down at the one down where Globe is now.
And at that time, we also had the Piggly Wiggly's down there where Dolvin's Appliance was in that. There was a Piggly Wiggly store in there, and there was one across the street that was called Buck Ware's Market.
Well, I talked to Jerry Bingner, and he told me that at the end of World War II, there were 32 grocery stores in Le Grand, and of course he was the owner or operator of Jules Grocery.
Yeah, and that would probably be about right, the different ones all the way around. The old log cabin grocery out where that little laundromat's out at the east end of Adams there. There's a highway grocery up a couple of blocks from that.
Why do you suppose that it ended the little neighborhood groceries? What?
Well, I think the bigger stores carrying more items probably had something to do with it, plus the fact that more transportation, more people had cars then and now. Back during the Depression, there's a lot of people didn't know even own a car. They couldn't afford one. If they had one, they couldn't afford to run it, even though gas was about 2 bits a gallon.
I can appreciate that. It now we only have the major grocery stores, and there's only 3 neighborhood groceries in town, isn't there, besides our major ones?
Well, you got J.D.'s, which used to be Sinden's Grocery down there on the corner. I forgot to mention that one a while ago. The one over on Spruce Street, the U.S. Devine's Grocery, and the Willow Grocery.
The Willow Grocery.
I think that's all there is that I know of.
Well, it used to be handy for a mother to send the kids to a little grocery store. But now, some of the people that can't drive, it's so far to walk.
Yeah, that's what's going to foul me up someday with a moving Safeway out and putting a plum out in the other end of town where I could have walked over the viaduct and picked me up some groceries when I get so I can't drive. Well, now I'm going to have somebody take me to go grocery shopping or do my shopping for me.
Well, that's a real hardship on several people.
Yeah, there's another thing that's went by the wayside, and that's barbershops. We used to have probably a dozen barbershops in town, and we've got 2 anymore, or 3.
I wonder what really happened there. Everybody has to get a haircut.
Yeah, well, they don't seem to do it as much as they used to or something. Of course, the price of haircuts, I go probably 6 and 8 weeks and sometimes more now. When I used to go in and have my hair trimmed up probably every 2 weeks and sometimes once a week, just because you could go in and get it done for $1, $1.25.
I remember during the Depression, you remember when Geddes had his barbershop on 8th Street? He charged 35 cents. Downtown it was 50 cents. Boy, they were unhappy with him.
I think that actually we've only got 2 or 3 barbershops in town here, and 1 in Island City, I think, is all we have now.
Well, when you were driving for the laundry and the dry cleaners, you mentioned that you got a commission besides a weekly wage. How did the commission work?
Well, I got 35%. $35 a week. What was it? About 7% of everything I handled at the dry cleaning plant. When I worked for the old Modern Laundry, it was just straight weekly salary. I went to work there for $17.50 a week.
Uh-huh.
And it was not a 40-hour week.
But you were able to tell people if they needed have more things done, or you gave them better service, and were able to build?
Well, I made a living at it, a pretty fair living at it, till it kind of went for the wayside. It went kind of like I'd roll taxi too, in between times there, and it went kind of the way the taxis went too after the war was over. Well, the taxi business went because everybody started getting cars then.
And suppose everybody bought laundry machines and do their own laundry.
Yeah, the laundries kind of went downhill.
Had several laundries, didn't we?
Well, we had the old standard laundry, mm-hmm. And then the modern laundry, which was across from the Elks Club there.
Uh-huh.
And that's the one I worked at. And then Mr. Batley. I went to school with his son, Bill. He run the standard laundry, and then when the war came along, he either enlisted or was called back into the service, and he closed that laundry down. Then later we had Barrett's laundry come in here, but it didn't last too long.
Then we had several dry cleaning places.
Well, the old modern laundry had dry cleaning in it, and then right after the war, Mel Walters came in here and started New Way Cleaners, and of course the odorless cleaners had been up there for quite some time.
That was Knight, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was Brownie Knight came in and bought that one. And I can't remember just when that was. I was in junior high school or right about that time, because I remember the Knights lived in them apartments right next door to where the number 10 Depot Street is. They lived in them apartments when they first moved here, and I got acquainted with Pat and Donna there when they first came to town.
Well, other businesses that we had and we don't have now, can you think of any of those?
Well, we don't have a hardware store anymore. We had Boney Camps, we had Zimmerman's, we've had Western Autos, Coast to Coast, In and Out on Coast to Coast and Western Auto. There was B1 and then there wouldn't be one, then there might be one again.
Wonder and why that is.
I have no idea.
People need
hardware.
And
you want some hardware now, you either... The only thing we have in town right now is Miller's. And they have a line of hardware in there. Otherwise, you got to go out to Bi-Mart or out to D&B or out to Walmart.
It's packaged, and you try to fit something that's in a package.
Yeah, and you used to be able to go in and buy two or three screws, and now they sell the, and that's all you needed. You wanted two or three screws to repair something, and now you got to go in and you could buy a package of a half a dozen or a dozen or something or other, and they're all packaged up, and then you take and throw the rest of them in a drawer and forget you got them, and then have to go buy some more someday.
It's not convenient.
No. It's like I told them years ago when the old First National Bank was here and they first started. I guess having progress and doing things. The bank kind of got took over by First National out of Portland or something. I don't know just how that went at that time, but anyhow, I went in one day and filled out a withdrawal slip to get some money out of my savings account. And the girl, and she went over and got on the telephone. And I stood there and waited, and finally she came back over, give me my money, and I says, well, this is progress, isn't it? And she says, what do you mean by that? I says, well, I used to come in, give you a withdrawal slip, you'd go over, pull a card out of it, pull a drawer out, pull the card up, look at it, come back over and hand me my money, and I was gone out of the place, and two or three minutes. I says, I've stood here over 10 minutes waiting for you to have somebody in Portland tell me whether I could have my money or not. Now that is progress.
Well, individual service seems to have gone by the way.
Well, it has.
Well, what other businesses can you think of that we had that we don't have anymore? Like clothing?
We have no men's clothing stores at all. We have a couple of women's clothing stores that just opened up within the last year or so. We've got one over there on Depot Street in the old Summer Hotel building. And you got one around in the old Wards building that just opened up here a short time ago. But other than that, you have no men's clothing stores. You have no women's clothing stores. You have no shoe stores. We used to have two or three shoe stores in town. We had a kid's store, maybe a couple of them. And I don't know, there must have been at least a half a dozen women's stores around, different types. And we don't have them anymore.
Well, growing up, there was Trotters. And it seemed like Harry McCarthy, who owned Trotters, groomed the kids growing up. You could charge something there, and if you paid your bill, you could charge something more. And he always had the best looking kids working in his store that wore clothing well, and it was a nice place to shop.
Yeah.
Zion's Men's Store.
You had Zion's Men's Store, and Sam was a nice fellow. I bought a lot of things off of him, and he's the one that really got to fitting me with shoes, and he didn't carry my size in stock all the time, and I'd go in and say, I need a pair of shoes, Sam, and he'd say, okay, I'll order them and have them for you in a few days. And then one day he got me a pair of shoes, and they didn't fit me anymore because my feet had grown. I'd gained some weight, and my feet had grown a little bit, so I had to start going to a larger shoe, and then he had them in stock all the time. But he was a nice guy to deal with, and I bought quite a bit of stuff off of Sam. I bought stuff, and I bought all my uniforms when I was working at the cleaning plant. I bought them all through Trotters.
Yeah. Another thing we don't have is secondhand stores like we had Lonnie Fiddler and Rogers and
Turns.
Yeah, Max Turn.
Max Turn.
What do you suppose the reason for that?
I don't know. The only thing you've got now is a Salvation Army.
You're an antique store.
Yeah. Well, there's another thing. I guess we have got this one bakery in town now, this little one down there.
Needs?
Yeah. I guess that's what Diz needs. Is that it?
On
Adams, where the corner cupboard grocery, or corner lunch, cupboard lunch.
Cupboard Cafe.
It's in there. And in where Paul Thomas had his barber shop, she took all that building there. But we used to have a couple little bakeries here in town. There's Winter's Bakery, and then it was, I can't think of the name of the guy that took it after Winter's had it. And then there was the old McWilliams Bakery over where Salvation Army is now. That was locally owned and run for a long time. Then he finally, when he got old enough, he sold it out to Eddie's, and Eddie's run it for a while, and then they closed it out and started trucking their bread in here from Boise or someplace.
Well, even donut shop, you had Dick Hartsock had the D&V donut shop, later Bud Bennett.
Yeah.
And then George had it.
Well, what's his name? Ken, runs his Ken's Yard Service. Gannon, he's the one that bought it off of Bud. But he didn't run it too good, so he got out of it pretty fast. My wife was working there at the time, or my ex-wife.
Well, you suppose it's places like Safeway's Baking and Albertson's and what have you, that or people just don't buy those things anymore.
Well, either that or there's just nobody that's once get into it anymore. I don't know what it is. That one used to do pretty good that was around there in the old Ward's building. It done pretty good for a long time, and then it changed hands, and then it went by the wayside. So either these guys that take them over knew nothing about it and thought, well, heck, he's making money, I can do it. They don't know how to run the thing after they get it.
Well, after the other one went out, there just been nobody to take their place.
No.
Of things that happened, Legrand boasted having 3 hotels at one time. And I don't know, what do you suppose happened there?
Motels are around, and I think if they hadn't tore down the old Sack Hotel, it would probably be going strong today, but it needed some changes and stuff. The hallways was narrow and one thing and another. But it was a well-built building. They had an awful time tearing it down.
They sure did. Well, the faces around LeGrand have changed quite a little bit for businesses.
Well, the people around town have changed a lot, too. I used to be able to call what biggest share of the people in town by their first name, doctors, lawyers, teachers, and all of them, because I dealt with most of them. And now I can go down and go to the grocery store or something. Maybe I can be in there half an hour, 45 minutes, and maybe I'll see one person I know, and maybe I will see none at all. And other days I can run into 3 or 4.
Well, it has changed that way.
Of course, we had our old bowling alley downtown, and under where the Red Cross rug was. And we had a duck pin alley at one time down in part of the Sack Hotel building.
I didn't know about that.
Didn't you know that one there?
No.
Yeah, there's another thing that we had, about 3 or 4 appliance stores around town.
True.
Now you've got one in town.
Arrow
is all you got in town. Then you got to go out to Sears. That's the only 2 you got around. You haven't got much choice anymore.
Well,
Raymond
strange.
Gray had the one down where the old Safeway store was in the Foley Hotel. Raymond Gray was in there. It's old Hot Point.
Well, then didn't Rosenbaum have...
Yes, Rosenbaum had appliances, and...
George Tiss? Tiss's Radio Music?
Yeah, they had refrigerators and stuff. We bought our first refrigerator off of Tiss's.
There has been a lot of change.
And lots of changes have happened along.
Well, can you think of any of the things that are the services better, or do you think in a lot of cases it's worse? Because,
well, I sometimes wonder. I've got a favorite saying that I won't say into this, but I get tired of trying to do business with somebody and have to suck up to them in order to get them to even take my money. Because I can ask them to come and service something or do something, and you can't get it done.
Well, we had businesses like electrical shops, and there is an electrical shop in town anymore that I know. We had plumbers. We haven't got a plumbing shop in town. You can call a plumber, but can't always get them.
There is no place you can walk into and talk to them or anything like you used to be able to. We had 2 or 3 plumbing shops and electrical shops like Buckley's and Space Plumbing and those kind of places. And I think about the only thing we have now is this dome out there that you can walk in and buy stuff. They don't have a plumber and they don't have an electrician, but they got the stuff you can buy.
That's strange, because people need those things
yeah.
even more than they did in the old days.
The one thing that I wonder about sometimes, now when I was a kid, I think the folks bought almost all my shoes at J.C. Penney's, and they had a big shoe department in there and had somebody working in the shoe department. Now we have no shoe store in town, and so they've got a few down in the basement in the corner instead of having a shoe department in there, which I think they could do real well with shoes here now, but they don't have them. I've never got a hold of the manager and asked him why they don't do something, but something needs to be done around here.
Well, it's odd because we have more population,
yeah,
and more of a buying area because LeGrand includes Elgin, Embler,
Coal,
Union,
North Powder.
Of
course, a lot of people in North Powder go to Baker because it's easier to go to Baker most of the time than it is to come over the mountain to come in here. And I don't understand why we have lost so many of the downtown businesses. When you get right down to it, most of them are the businesses you have downtown now, because we lost a good one when we lost the Keith O'Brien or Falks or whatever. It used to be Falks, and then it was Keith O'Brien's when it went out. Big department store, you could buy lots of things in there. Had men's and women's clothing and household furnishings, not furniture, but household stuff, beddings and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know. It seemed to me like some store ought to be able to do something, and I can't understand why the Emporium went out, but it went out.
In growing up, you had Montgomery and Ward's that had all these different things. Did you ever think that you'd see a time you wouldn't have Montgomery and Ward's?
No, I didn't. It was more or less, they had a shoe department too, and clothing department, men's clothing department, women's clothing department, all kinds of appliances, all kinds of furniture. And then all of a sudden it's gone.
Would you say that the fact that we have a mobile community where they can get in the car and travel a number of miles away and buy something, that had something to do with it?
That's got quite a bit to do with it, because you hear people saying, well, I went to Tri-City shopping and I went here or there or someplace else. I run down to Boise and I got some stuff down there. I don't know, even when I was working at the cleaning plant, it used to amaze me the number of people that I'd go to deliver something to their house, and here would be a package laying there on the porch that the mailman had left from Charles F. Berg's or Myron Frank's or somebody in Portland. So there's a lot of people here at that time. And that was through from 1950 to 1972 that I worked there, that one cleaning plant. And there's lots of people here was getting stuff from Myron Franks and Charles F. Berger's and some of those places down to Portland. Because I'd see the packages laying there with the names on them.
Well, our whole picture of town has changed considerably on businesses and restaurants that we used to know.
Well, we don't have restaurants anymore. What have we got? One or two actual restaurants now, and the rest of them, we've got Chinese food, we've got Mexican food, and we've got about one or two restaurants, and everything else is fast food.
Yes.
What was the one that was out on the end of East Adams there, the drive-in we had back then? Was that Three Little Pigs or something?
We had Little Pig Drive-In.
Yeah, Little Pig Drive-In.
Yeah.
I was out there one day and seen Bing Crosby out there.
I heard that he was in town.
He was, that was, he was out there and had some of his kids with him, and he was stopped there to get something to eat. I didn't talk to him or anything, but I seen him and knew who it was. Another one that used to come to town pretty regular was Gene Follett.
He was from down on the Amnaw.
Yeah, he had a ranch down there, and he was in business with Ed Gettings out to Elgin. They had a sawmill together. And he'd come in town, he'd come in on the train, and I'd take him in a cab. This was in the 50s when I was driving cab, or 40s, from 46 to about 1950 when I was driving cab. And I'd take him out to Elgin to see Ed Gettings, and then bring him back in here, and then he'd stay at the hotel and call up the ranch, and the guys would come from the ranch down, pick him up, take him up to the ranch. And I guess he thought that we was going to get invaded or something. I don't know what he thought, but I guess when they cleaned out that place up there, he had tons of stuff, sugar and all kinds of stuff up there, and he had been one of Bassy Sage's biggest customers. He had all kinds of stuff that he bought from Bassy Sage up there, and they had a real clean out up there when they got ready to get rid of that ranch up there, and they had a big sale up there and really clean. Had all kinds of stuff that he had hoarded away because he thought we was going to be invaded, I guess.
He had guns and all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Black man in town that you knew of.
Well, to my knowledge, he was the first one here. And that was in 1929 when I first moved here and lived down on Madison Street, right across from the old, I don't know whether it was telephone company or the light company, had a pole yard there back of Van Patten Lumber Company. And I guess from what my mother told me, I was only about 4 years old when we moved here. 4 years going on five. And here come this big black man walking down the street. And I guess I went into the house screaming my head off. And that's the first one I had ever seen, and he was August Stang's chauffeur. And he lived on down just below where we was living. And lived on east of us there, a few houses. And he would drive August Stang to work, and then I guess take the car back home and then walk back to his house, and then he'd have to go get the car and go back and get August, but he worked for August Stang as a chauffeur.
August Stang was the owner of the Mount Emily Mill.
Yeah, and Mrs. Stang never knew how to cook, never cooked. She always had the cook up there and the housekeepers. She never done anything in that line until they sold their big house and built their new one. And then she started learning how to cook. She didn't even know how to boil water. So I was told.
Few people are like that today.
Yeah, we've got some of them around yet today that can't boil water.
I'm going to ask you, when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, what were the first things that happened that you knew, and what were you doing?
Let's see, that was in 41. I was still in high school, what little I went. And I can't remember too much about it. I know that I got called up in 42. I got called up and went to Spokane to take a physical. And I was standing up there with my hand in the air to be sworn in, and they called me back and told me that they wasn't going to take me because I had the inactive TB, and I told them they didn't know what they was talking about, but they insisted on it, and that those little postage stamp size x-rays that they took, and there was some color in my lungs, and so I said I had inactive TB. So I came home, went up to Dr. Gilstrap and had some large x-rays taken, had them sent down to the TB hospital down to Dallas and come back, that I did not have TB, had never had TB. I had scar tissue in my lungs from having double pneumonia twice when I was a baby. I started smoking when I was 11 years old, and of course there was spots in my lungs, but there was nothing wrong with my lungs. I turned that into the draft board that took the letter down and gave it to them, and they never reclassified me. And then when the Korean bid, or the, I guess it was Korean bid, came along in the 50s, I got called up again and went to Boise and had a physical. Passed that one. My lungs were still in the same shape. I was still smoking, still had spots in my lungs, but they never found them, I guess. I don't know. But anyhow, I came back home, and they decided I was too old for them, and they wanted young kids. They didn't want anybody my age. So I never did go in the service.
Well, when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, do you remember them putting men with rifles on the railroad bridges out of town?
No, I never seen any of that. I can't remember what was going on. Whether it was about the time of that Korean bid or what, I was in the JCs, and that's a junior chamber of commerce, and we built a observation booth up on top of the Sack Hotel.
That was to spot airplanes?
Spot airplanes. We built that observation booth up there on top of the Sack Hotel, and that was the time that they was filming the painted wagon. And who was in that movie? Can't remember what his name was now.
Well, I remember Pillars of the Sky.
Oh, I guess it was Pillars of the Sky, rather, painted
that
wagon.
That was filmed with Jeff Chandler.
Yeah.
Up on the Grand Round River.
Yeah, and they stayed in the Sack Hotel, and they rode up and down in the elevator with us sometimes when we was hauling stuff up on the roof, and then they come up to look on the roof to see what we was doing up there. We would haul the materials into the hotel, in through the hotel lobby, and stick them in the elevator and ride up as far as we'd go, and then back them up the rest of the way.
Well, getting back to when starting World War II, things that happened around locally, of course, a lot of the young men were called up for physical and to be drafted. And a number of people went to the Portland area to work in shipyards. Of course, it was very soon we had rationing, and you couldn't travel very far.
No, you couldn't.
What were the biggest changes you saw during that era of time?
Well, the fact you had gas rationing going on, you had sugar rationing going on. You even had to have shoe stamps in order to buy a pair of shoes. And I don't know, some people had all the gas and more gas than they wanted. I worked for one place. I worked for Bill Rivers delivering eggs and produce and stuff, and we had all the gas we wanted. We had no trouble getting gas at all. And then other times you'd have trouble depending. Worked part of the time at the Modern Laundry. Tires were shot on my truck, and I had to go to Union once a week, and I had to fight with the ration board in order to get tires. And then all they wanted to give me was some old cheap recaps that wouldn't hold together, say, when you got them out on the highway and drove them. So I had an awful go around with the ration board, but I finally got some decent tires for my truck so I could. And at that time, we was doing all the laundry. We done the Grand Round Hospital's laundry. We done the Sack Hotels. We done the Spoli Hotels. We done the. They couldn't get help. There were so many people who was gone due to the war and one thing or another. And the Foley Hotel had a laundry room, so did the Sack Hotel, and so so did the Grand Round Hospital, but they couldn't evidently get the help or something, because we had all of them I was taking care of.
Did you notice a difference when the cadets came in 1943 and they put them in the Sacagawea Hotel?
I didn't have too much to do with that. I wasn't... I can't remember just when I went to work for the Modern Laundry, but I know those cadets around here.
They blocked off Fur Street there alongside the hotel, and when they got demerits, they had to walk them off there on the street, and then they marched them up at the college for their classes. It was the 354th Air Division or Squadron, and then they took pre-flight out at the airport.
Yeah, I wasn't around where the cadets was, so I didn't know too much about them.
Well, I noticed some of the boys were a little bit disgusted because that many competition for the girls that were in town.
The cadets was running around with a lot of the girls, because the girls thought them uniforms was real nice.
And then you wanted to go to a show on a weekend, and there was usually a line for a block. We were operating the Granada Theater, the State Theater, and the Liberty Theater.
Yeah, we had three theaters that time.
They were always full on the weekend, because that was about the only thing in town to do.
Was the old Zuber Hall operating at that time?
Well, I was working at the theaters. I think they were.
I think it was, but I'm not positive about it.
Zuber Hall was for dancing. Yeah. And you remember after the war, when the fellows come back from the service, and a lot of them were going to college under the GI Bill, and they'd have a dance at the Zuber or the college or the high school, and the young fellows would dress up real nice, and they'd take a corsage to their girlfriend. Remember any of that?
I was never into any of that. I never even had a girlfriend until well after that, and I was out working, and not at any time when I was going to school or right after I was out of school. Well, I did go with one or two gals who was going to college here, but...
Well, they had a lot of dances back in those days, but I don't think today you could hardly have a dance, because there's not too many people dancing, except maybe down at the senior center. There's a few of those people dance when they have music at their dinners down there.
Yeah, that's another thing that's going by the wayside, is there fraternity clubs that, like the Elks and the Eagles. There's no dances at the Eagles anymore. They don't have one very often at the Elks.
No. You remember when you were a kid when the Elks would give out candy at Christmas time?
I never did go up there.
You never went down?
No, I never did go up there.
Well, they give you an apple and an orange with some candy in a sack, and sometimes the kids would be lined up for a block.
Well, that was the old Burger Grocery down there at Halloween on their trick-or-treating. She would work for 2 weeks or so before Halloween, sacking up penny candy and stuff, and have boxes of it sitting there, and then Halloween night she'd open the front door, and she had a deal set there, and she'd sit there behind it with on a chair and pass out these sacks of candy and stuff to the kids.
Yeah.
And they never done anything around Burger's Grocery, but they didn't get along with Mr. Sinden too well, so he because Mr. Sinden didn't treat the kids like the rest of the people in the neighborhood. And so there was a few problems a time or two up at the old Sinden grocery. But Mrs. Berger always had to, I don't know how many of those she would fix up. And then on the 4th of July, we always had a fireworks stand when I was a kid living down that neighborhood. Down on the corner from us, just across Z Avenue, around the corner of Z and Spruce there, there's usually a fireworks stand set up there. And she'd buy a bunch of fireworks, and she'd have shooting off Roman candles and sky rockets and one thing another around there. We had a big fireworks display down that neighborhood every 4th of July that the Burgers put on.
There's something that's changed.
Yeah.
There's still a booth now and then that sell fireworks, but it's quite regulated, but you don't have as many kids losing fingers and maybe an eye that were happening during that time.
Yeah. There's a lot of changes been made since we was kids.
Did you ever find it hard to find something to do when you were a kid?
Not too much. Summertime, we was down at the river swimming because the old Crystal Plunge that was there for the viaduct, it closed down. And we either had to go to Cove or go up to, what was it, Mountain Springs or something?
Pine Cone.
That's what it was, Pine Cone. We'd have to go up there. So we had two or three pretty good holes down here in the river, so most of us swam in the river, besides we didn't have the money to go up to Pine Cone.
Down to High Banks?
Yeah.
Just above Riverside Park there on the river?
Yeah, we go down there. There's a real big gang of kids of us down there all the time. I had a good friend that lived in the neighborhood there by the name of Jerry Hendrickson. Him and I used to be about the first ones in the river every spring. We'd get in there while there's still ice floating down the river and swim across the river and go over on one side and build a fire over there and then come back over and then we'd swim across and then go in and stand there by our fire and get warm again. There'd still be ice floating in the river. The rest of the kids wouldn't hardly go in with us. And Jerry got killed in the service.
Did you ever ice skate?
No, I never did. I never did ice skate. There used to be some ice skating going on in the pond. That's another thing that disappeared.
Pioneer Park?
At Riverside Park. Our pond is gone.
Yeah. Well, at Pioneer Park, they had one too.
Oh, it did.
I lived in that neighborhood. And we'd have two or three days of real good skating, and somebody invariably opened the head gate, and the water would come in there, and the wind would cause it to ripple, and it'd ruin the smooth skating.
Oh, yeah, I remember something about that pond over there. What was it that happened? They put in, was putting in some sewer lines or for take care of the street runoffs or something or other, and they got them running the wrong direction and drained the pond over there when they opened it up. Somebody was telling me about that the pipe was lower than the pond.
Well, it's an interesting thing. Most people don't realize that there's a 22-foot drop for where the river comes in at Ordell to in there where Commercial Tire is now at 4th and Jefferson. And the floods that we've had, that's the original course of the river down through there.
Yeah.
And so when high water come along, they always wondered why the water went down there. Well, that was the reason.
Well, you used to have the ditch that run from all the way through this whole end of town and over and then down Spruce Street. Zigzagged across different streets and what have you, and then down Spruce Street to X, and then X out to the mill pond, and And then there was irrigation rights off of that besides that.
Yeah.
Because it was a place right there at where I lived. It went run under the sidewalk there, and you had a plank in there you could pull up and drop a board in and turn the water and send it down Y Avenue to where the people had water rights down there. Now you don't even have a mill pond out here anymore.
What happened in 65 when we had the flood in this area that you live in here?
Well, I lived over here on 2nd Street, just a block from where I'm living here now.
Uh-huh.
And we was evacuated. They told us to get out, and the water was running down the street. And that was 64. Because that was the year my daughter was born.
Oh.
And I took them all up. My mother-in-law lived up on 8th Street, just below the hill up there. And I took the family up there and left them, and then I came back down to the house. I wasn't supposed to be there, but I came down anyhow, and I went down to my basement. And the floor wasn't too good in there, and I had a well in the basement, and water was coming up out of my well. And coming up, it's a bad spot there on the floor. So I disconnected my pump in the well and put a hose on it and threw it down there in the lowest spot I had in the basement and started pumping water, and I kept the water down in my basement. I wasn't even supposed to be there, and I was staying there anyhow. And I went to bed, hear the pump running, and then the power went off, the lights went out. Well, I'm going to have a mess now. I finally went to sleep. I took most of our bedding up to my mother-in-law's for the kids, because at that time I had 5 kids at home with that new baby, and so they was all staying with my mother-in-law, and she didn't have enough stuff, so we took most of her bedding up there. And so I piled some coats and stuff on me and was in on my bed. Lights come back on, I could hear my pump take off and start running again. I went down. I never did have too much damage done in my basement. Kept the water out of my furnace and everything. House next door to me, on the south side of me, the guy had bought that house. He'd put a bathroom down the basement. He fixed a basement down there and put a bathroom down there and stuff, and he had water plumb up to the rafters and that up to the ceiling in that basement there. And the funny part of it was the house on the north side of me didn't even have a cement floor. It was just dirt floor down there, and it wasn't even wet.
Strange things happen.
But I was able to keep the water out of my basement. Saved everything. Didn't have an expense of a new furnace and all that stuff.
When you growing up as a kid, how did your parents heat your house?
Well, part of the time we heated with coal, and part of the time we heated with wood, depending on where we were living.
Seems like you used to be able to buy a whole load of wood for $2 or $4.
Yeah, we burned
from the mill.
We'd get box ends and slab ends. We'd get
Slabs were cheaper than the box ends.
Yeah. And we'd get a load of boxwood and then get a couple loads of slab wood. Most of the boxwood we used for kindling. And we burned wood when we was living down there on Spruce and Y. We burned wood in that house. But we lived in a brick house over here on W, just we're about where W runs into Jackson over here, and that house had a coal furnace in it, and we burned coal in that, but it was lump coal. And the house after my dad died, and we bought this place over on 2nd Street. Mom bought this one over on 2nd Street. It had a coal furnace in it, just one big floor register. The way the furnace set in there, there was just a little hallway back in and a rounded out place, and wooden walls around it. And we burned lump coal in that all the time. There wasn't room enough to put a stoker in there, so we used nothing but big lump coal in that one. I really missed that when I took it out, because I'd come home at night and pull my chair up there and set my feet out in the middle of that in the winter time and get my feet warm, because I'd been out slopping around in the snow all day long. Even if you wore a pair of overshoes, well, you still just like you stand in a bucket of ice water, because you'd get snow on your shoes and then climb back in the car with the heater running, and it just kept melting that snow off, and it was just like you'd stood in ice water all day long. Finally, my mother got so she couldn't take care of the furnace anymore, and I was gone so much that I finally put in a gas furnace. And that first year with the gas furnace in there, we almost froze to death because it was a different type of heat.
Well, you know, a lot of these houses that had a partial basement in there were then the people dug them out and finished the basement.
Yeah.
I know the house my parents lived in, it is partial like that, and it seemed like so many houses that I knew that they had the walls down there, but they never put the whole basement.
Well, this was just a half basement in, and then somebody had knocked the hole back in there and put the furnace in. Well, the VA ruined that house over there, because this going back in there, there was wooden walls up, oh, about 4 feet high around in there. Well, when I sold the house, it went on a veteran's loan, and they made them tear all that out. They wanted me to tear it out, and I says, no, I'm not doing anything more at this house, not at this price. If I'm going to sell this house, we'll renegotiate this, and it's going to be a better price if I've got to do any more work on it. Because this is, deal was made at the condition the house was in now, and I'm not going to do any more work on it. I didn't want to sell it anyhow. My wife wanted to sell it. We were breaking up. So they insisted that, well, the guy that bought it said he would do the work that they wanted done, and part of it was to tear that wood out of there, because they didn't want any wood touching dirt.
Yeah.
Well, the last time I was in the house over there, you'd go in the basement and the walls was down in there, and the dirt had all caved down in, and there was so musty down there you couldn't even breathe. Mm-hmm. And I had to get out of there because it choked me up so bad. And that was the last time I went in there. It was after it had been sold, and I tore out, and the house changed hands a couple of times. They had that for sale, and I just went in to look it over and see what they'd done to it. You couldn't even breathe down that basement. And we'd never had that problem all the years I lived there, from 1938 to 1974.
Yeah, strange things. Now, many times they want you to put Visqueen underneath the house as a vapor barrier.
Yeah, there's been a lot of changes around here. A lot of little old buildings gone that used to be here. What was it? Now I'm having trouble thinking of names again. Does that come with old age, John?
Very possible.
Rogers. Rogers had a secondhand store across from where the Hub City was there. Little old wooden building there. And there was wooden sidewalks down Madison Street at that time. Most of Madison Street down there was wooden sidewalks. And part of it didn't have any sidewalks. Still don't. But I don't know, John, I guess you can call it progress. I don't know. I sometimes wonder.
Well, in those early times, the population was about 8,000. And then it's 12,000 now. And there's been some changes. Not always for the best.
Well, we've got more changes coming, and I don't think they're for the best, but there isn't anything I can do about it.
Yeah.
I really don't think we need that big Walmart out there, but I've got nothing to say about it there. I'm going to take my word for it. But I think Walmart's going to start having some trouble one of these days because they closing up a store up in Canada because they wanted to unionize it. They say that the store just isn't doing any good and they aren't making any money. But the main reason they're closing is because they don't want a union in their stores. And they proved that down in Texas here a few years ago when the butchers all was going to go union. Well, they just got rid of all their butchers and started buying their meat prepackaged from the wholesalers that way, and not done away with the butchers in the store down in Texas. So they don't want unions.
We used to have two packing houses here.
Yeah.
Walt Sweets and Eldridge Packing Plant.
Yeah.
Which
was the old Mount Emily.
Yeah. They don't seem to have any place around here anymore that.
No, I noticed the one outfit that comes in here and delivers out there to Joe's says Tri-City on it, but that's out of Meridian over there in Idaho is where their meat comes from, delivered around town here.
We had one at Union and one at Elgin.
Well, look at the big grocery houses we used to have here.
True.
We had two of them, Interior Grocery and Baker LeGrand Grocery.
And they were wholesale.
Yeah, that was their wholesale.
To the grocery store.
Yeah.
Those are changes that have happened, and most people don't think of those things.
No, they don't. And what do we got now? We got one or two little print shops here now. And we used to have three or four of them.
Yeah.
On Happersett and Palmer's. Of course, I guess Palmer still operates.
And then Shorb, who ran the Eastern Review, he did a certain amount of printing. I mentioned to somebody the other day that Payless Drugstore started here in LeGrand, their very first store. Gene Detrick was the manager.
Yeah, my sister worked there. And one day a salesman come in and he says, where's the 3P girl? My sister says, who? Well, the 3P girl that works here. Well, I don't know any 3P girl. What do you mean? Well, she's pretty petite and pregnant. He was looking for one of the help in there, or some salesman and looking for one of the help that done the buying off of that particular deal or something or other, but she was pretty petite and pregnant. Yeah, look at the drugstores we used to have.
True.